When the Men's World Cup for 2026 kicks off on the 12th of June, 48 teams will battle it out for football glory at fixtures across the three host nations, Mexico, Canada and the USA. Australia's Socceroos will be there, as will Southeast Asian regional powerhouses South Korea and Japan, but also so will be Cape Verde, Curaçao, Haiti, ranked at 83 and indeed ranked at 85 in the world, New Zealand. But absent from the 2026 World Cup is the more or less everything else superpower, China, whose current FIFA ranking is 94, only a few points ahead of Palestine. China hasn't qualified for the Men's World Cup since 2002, and that led Mark Dreyer, the China Sports Insider behind the website and podcast, The China Sports Insider, to ask a very blunt question in The Economist recently. Why is China so bad at football? Well, let's find out Mark's answer now. Mark, welcome to Sunday Extra.
Thank you. I should add that the title wasn't mine, but as
no, yeah, exactly. I was going to ask you about your residency status first up.
Obviously, they try to have a succinct and catchy title, but it does sum up the situation. You know, it's a sad indictment of where China is. Just to give a little bit more context, I've covered the many highs but also lows of the Chinese sporting spectrum over the past close to two decades. So I don't want people to think, oh, here's another person bashing China. Mm. I would love the Chinese football team to have qualified, to be successful, to be at least on the international map when it comes to football. But that's just not the case.
Well, in your Economist piece, you put China's football underperformance down to, I think, three things. And the first one that you cite is corruption. So why is corruption such a big issue in Chinese football?
To give you a little bit of context for this year, there are 16 teams in the Chinese Super League in the ongoing season. Nine of the 16, so more than half of the teams, started on negative points because of a whole raft of sentences handed out for match fixing and corruption and so on. Anyone who's followed Chinese football for a little bit of history knows that this is not the first time. This is not a one-off. There were at least two big rafts of punishments that have been handed out that I can remember, including lots of people going to prison, including players, officials, and referees and owners as well, club officials and football officials. I think probably the most famous one was just a few years ago where Li Tia, who actually played for Everton for a bunch of years after the 2002 World Cup, he was later the national coach of the Chinese team and then was accused of corruption and is in prison right now.
And for no short period either. It's 20 years he's inside for it, yeah?
Yes, exactly. There were periods before that where lots of players were banned. And so this seems to be a cycle that goes on and on and on. There is the connection in Asia with gambling, and so that is one of the reasons. But clearly the fact that they haven't got rid of it, it's endemic in the system rather than a few bad eggs who have been corrupting from within.
The next factor that you point to, Mark, is political interference. And if the first subject was touchy, I imagine this is even touchier. But why is political interference particularly a problem? And I suppose, how do you see that affecting on-field performance in China?
Okay, so FIFA gets a lot of stick. And if you look at the current World Cup, I think most of it is well-deserved. What FIFA does do, and historically has done quite effectively, is punished and banned national federations from international competition if there is interference from the government involved in those countries, because it goes against the FIFA statutes. So number one, that's why it's not allowed. But what you have is you have non-footballing people making footballing decisions. And I've yet to see any evidence that that is to the benefit of the football team. And so I think that, largely speaking, that's why FIFA has that in its statutes. China has always had a free pass on this. We could debate the reasons why that might be, but it's important to note that FIFA doesn't just turn a blind eye for this. It has a history of rooting out government interference across the globe and banning nations, except China has never been part of that. The reason why I talk about government interference in China is because nothing is outside of the state. The Chinese would say, well, that's just the way that our country works. But the Football Association is a part of the sports ministry. Like, it couldn't be more affiliated with the government. And in 2015, when they announced a 50-point plan to revamp Chinese football, which on the surface was a great plan, you know, it had all the things. If you were coming out as a foreign consultant writing a plan for Chinese football, with one or two exceptions about ideology, for example, you'd have most of those points in there. It was pretty good. But one of the stipulations in there was the separation of government with the football. So there was a big move to do this, but quite frankly, it was only really a surface level campaign. Nothing really happened. You know, I've been handed business cards where someone has their football association and their sports ministry affiliation on the same business card. And this was after the supposed separation. I'll give you one reason why, for example, this impacts performance on the field, which I think is quite a good illustration. A number of years ago, there was a campaign from the top, and this is the problem with the Chinese system, is you get these government political mandates handed down to the football people. They were told that the players couldn't have tattoos. So this was an issue because some of the players already had tattoos. Right. One of them, who was a pretty good fullback, and in fact was rumored to be looked at by Chelsea at one time, he had tattoos kind of most of the way up to his chin. So his neck was full and both arms and so on. And so the players who had tattoos had to wear these sleeves and bandage wraps to cover them up on the field. And presumably then were worried about going into sliding tackles and having these bandages removed or slipped off because they get punishments. So it's like it's real world impact. That's the last thing that you want. You want to be wearing the latest high-tech, quick-dry clothing, not these bandage wraps to, you know, so that the people watching on TV are not offended. So the whole thing is a farce. Speaking of tattoos, Messi has tattoos all over his back. David Beckham, another reasonably good player, known for his tattoos. So there's no real connection between lack of tattoos and good football performance. But yeah, that's one example of a sort of political mandate that has an obvious negative impact.
We're speaking with the China Sports Insider on Sunday Extra, Mark Dreyer. And Mark, that point that you just made, I think, leads us to the third observation in your piece, this football philosophy imposed from the top instead of built from the bottom. But I know you're making a broader point there about the way football cultures thrive, not just in China, but elsewhere. Why is it that a football philosophy can't be imposed from the top effectively?
Chinese officials work in these 3 to 4 year promotion cycles. So you get given a task and you want to create a splash, for example, in football, bringing in David Beckham as an ambassador, which doesn't really do much in either the short or the long term. But that's, you know, one of the things that happened in the early days of Chinese football for this period. But you need a long-term plan. Countries have done this quite successfully. Japan is a great example of looking at this and thinking, right, we need to start with the five-year-olds. And in 20 years, they could be half decent or globally competitive 25-year-olds. You can't speed things up when it comes to human capital in the way that you could throw machines and robots and manufacturing at it, the way that China has turbocharged many other industries. You know, we look at electric vehicles, fantastically successful, the envy of the rest of the world. And they've come from a starting point where they were really way behind in the car industry globally, but are now streets ahead. But you can't take a 15-year-old and do it in 10 years. It's too late when it comes to football. The sport is too competitive. You have billions of people playing globally. So China can't apply its usual framework that has worked in other industries to football. You also can't take China's sporting framework that works when it comes to Olympic sports and apply it to football because it's a team game that needs creativity. And again, it sort of sounds cliche to say these things, but there is some truth in this. The sports where China has been successful, things like table tennis, things like diving, things like gymnastics, where you are very precise and very disciplined and you rehearse the same thing again and again, you don't want to have any change between this dive and the next dive and 10,000 dives. You want to do 10,000 dives the exact same way. You can't have 10,000 moves on a football pitch. because people are going to quite quickly work you out. So you need creativity. But what they're doing is they're stifling that creativity through the regimented framework of other sports that has worked in those other sports, but can't be applied to football. So I don't know if I'm making the point clearly enough, but you can't apply either the kind of manufacturing turbocharging system or the rigid disciplined sports framework to football, both of which could speed up the timeline. But China just doesn't have the patience to see this through, and they want instant results.
And despite all the convincing points that you're making, Mark, I just can't stop myself thinking, but this is a country of a billion people. Surely they have the raw material and the ability to generate a genuinely world-class team. Which leads, I suppose, to the next question, Mark. How many people actually play football in China?
If you look at the grassroots base in the countries that are successful, it's far, far higher, obviously on a percentage-wise, but also just on a numbers wise of people in Brazil and all across Europe and many, many other countries in the world. You just don't see people kicking a ball around in parks in the way that you do in many other countries in the world. You probably see more people playing basketball. Basketball is also very popular in China. You know, the pickup games, but you don't have these organized or sort of unorganized pickup games in football. Of course, you know, it's a big country. There are going to be people who play it. But I think the system, there's some social pressures at work here. And while things have improved, there is such a focus on academics and about trying to make it to the top of the pyramid, to higher up in the pyramid. The competition, for example, at the university level is extreme to the point where most people can't comprehend this. China is still a system and a country where most people only have one child, even though more recently that has relaxed. But the majority of families over the past few decades only have one child. There's something like 10 million new graduates every year competing for the same jobs. And so things like football would be seen, quite frankly, as a distraction to something more meaningful, which is providing for the family and providing in these families for two parents and potentially four grandparents as well. So extra pressure, extra academic pressure, extra social pressure, and things like football or having, you know, in Western countries, there's this comprehension, healthy body, healthy mind. And if you're more relaxed and you play sports, that's generally a good thing. It's a more balanced lifestyle. But those things get squeezed out in the Chinese system, and it's understandable why parents would come to those conclusions. If my kid is not going to become a professional in this sport, then why is he or she spending time on this? Because what is the ultimate goal? If they reach that conclusion, which the vast majority of people who play sport around the world are not going to become professionals, and that's okay. But in the Chinese system, it'd be like, well, then I need to spend my time doing something more productive. I'm massively generalizing here to try to just give an overall framework of how the society would look at this. But again, even if you were incredibly good at football in China and you were on the professional track and you look at the success or lack of the national team, which set of parents would say, I would love that for my son or daughter to be the shame of the country, basically, and not qualify for another World Cup and everyone groaning in horror. So it's a tricky situation. I think that countries like Japan have shown that if you stick to the plans, take the grassroots and the younger level and build for a generation, you can do it. And some people have pointed out in recent days that, you know, China is beginning to have some success at some of these youth levels. And so there are perhaps some green shoots. If you think about the plan that was started 10 years ago, it wouldn't be the national team that is bearing fruit. It would be those youth levels. And so China has had some success there. Again, the second half of this journey, I would say, is going to be significantly harder than the first, because at a high level, the political desire and will to push forward sports well, to push forward, football in particular, I think has not just faded, but pretty much vanished. And so I'm not holding my breath as to whether China does have a breakthrough within the next 10 years. But again, I would love to see it happen. I really would love to see it happen. But I've had to revise my predictions down continuously from, I'll be honest, a decade ago, I thought China might have a chance of being a top 20 team in the world. I've been on record of saying that, but I've just had to revise down year by year as things just haven't panned out the way that they were planned.
And Mark, you said before no one want their son or daughter to be pursuing that career, which does raise the question of the Chinese women's national team, the Steel Roses, which on the brute stats at least seems to be doing a lot better. They're ranked number 16. Just behind the Matildas, who are number 15. They've been to two World Cup finals, won the Asian Cup in 2022. Do the problems that you were referring to before apply equally to women's football in China?
They do. The spotlight for the women's team is far less bright. But I would give you some context there that in 1995, the Chinese women's team got to the semis. They were actually runners-up in the Women's World Cup in 1999. And so the last three World Cups have been quarterfinals, round of 16, and group stage. So they've actually tailed off considerably over the past 25 years or so, 25, 30 years. I think it's not so much there that the Chinese women's team has got worse, but women's football globally has become much more professional. It's become much more competitive. Obviously, on the stats, you said 16th, it's a top 20 team, but the numbers of countries around the world playing at a reasonable level, at a professional, semi-professional level in women's football is just not as great. And so that's why I would caution reading too much into those stats. But in fact, in some ways, the women's team is more disappointing just because they were they were thereabouts. They were in the mix at the top of the global game and they've, fallen away from that.
Well, Mark, you are called the China Sports Insider because you live inside China. And given the amount of talking we've done about the problems with Chinese sport, I'm starting to get concerned for your residency. So we should probably draw a line under it there. Thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Extra.
My pleasure.
That's Mark Dreyer, the China Sports Insider. And Mark also wrote the book Sporting Superpower, an insider's view on China's quest to be the best.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.